Warning, this podcast has stories of real-life events and true crime that happens every day. These stories may contain adult language and graphic or disturbing details not suitable for everyone. Listener discretion is advised. In our society, most people are content to go through their daily lives safely and peacefully. But our society is not always safe or peaceful. For that reason, some men and women answer a higher calling to defend and protect their fellow man. You probably know someone who is one of these people, or maybe you are one of these people. The ones who see and do the things most people would never want to. These things are sometimes heroic and beautiful, but often they are horrific and terrifying. It's these things they don't share about with other people. It's these things they carry with them, so you don't have to. But when they get together, they talk to each other about them. And they call these stories war stories. Welcome to another episode of the War Stories Podcast. I'm Tom.
And I'm John.
And with us still is Matt. What's up?
Hey, guys.
Welcome back, I guess. Back.
Yeah. Good to be here. Good to stay here.
Yeah. We've had you on a couple times. And for those of you that were privileged enough to listen to the very rare Manstalgia Podcast episodes that are now like the Lost Honeymooners episodes, they'll remember you from there.
Yes, from the archives.
But we did talk about it further in the last week, and I think we're going to go ahead and move forward with, based on your feedback, with doing the locker room show.
Yeah.
And then it'll rotate. It'll just, you know, be me and Matt, or Matt and John, or me and John, or me, Matt and John, or Elliot and Matt, or me and Elliot, or whoever it's going to be. It'll be a rotating group so that we don't tax one person too much twice a week. But yeah, we'll talk about current events, and we'll also talk about our unique perspective on men's issues, and hopefully we'll have some women in that also share our unique perspective on life, the universe, and everything to talk about women's issues, so we can kind of get their perspective. We did get your feedback about having the wives on,
which is a lot harder, by the way. You know, it's easier said than done, because trust me, We've been working on this for a while, even before we've talked about it
on the show a couple of times.
Yeah,
one of the wives, and I won't say who, but she, and for good reason, she just flat out said, you know, I'm ready to talk about that part of my life, because it's over and I'm past it, and I don't know if I want to go back to that. Well, and then my wife is like, why do people want to me really? And I was like, yeah. She says, okay. And then your wife's just got a busy schedule and getting her to, well, also a baby.
Yeah. So
there's that.
Yeah.
But they did, your wife and my wife at least agreed.
They did agree
to it.
Yeah. We just need to set it up in advance.
Yeah. So we'll try to maybe get a third wife and let us know, send us a message.
Oh, what about Aaron's wife?
So we talked to her. We'll see if we can get a couple other people. But I was thinking not just Aaron's wife, but you know, Annie is both a cop's wife,
yeah,
and a cop,
right.
So I don't know.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah, right.
Good luck.
She wouldn't even talk during the episodes where she was with us.
She'll yell from afar.
She'll yell at us. We're being stupid, which, you know, admittedly, we usually are being stupid. But today we are waiting to be joined by a police officer from Australia. You guys had asked for international guests, and we have been trying. We had one guest ghost us. He was in the British Special Forces or in the British Army. And I think what happened was he just kind of, we reached out to him to schedule, and crickets back. So the international stuff, we are trying. If you have somebody that's international, today's international guest is brought to you by a friend of mine who listens to the show. He said, hey, you should have my buddy John on. He's from Australia, and he's a former motor cop. So that's who we're waiting on. But this will be our first guest from the future.
Because
that's four stories first.
The future.
Because as we record this, he is already, we are recording on an afternoon, and he is recording the following morning. So he's
that's
the,
a trip.
He's the actual.
It's like passing the sun twice in an airplane.
I know, right?
Yeah.
Well, veterans have done that.
Have done that more than once.
And then, you know, the Navy guys cross the equator.
Yep.
Is it every time you cross the equator that you do that?
You do that one time. You get
No, I mean, like, every time the ship crosses the equator, you have a ceremony? Because there's always new people?
There's always polywogs.
Okay. Yeah. So that was an interesting... And we've had people who were in the Navy talk about, oh, my God, this is what happened to me, and this is what happened to me. But I thought, while we're waiting on our Aussie friend, we would read a couple of messages that we've gotten. Some of them just say, hey, here's my clan tag. Can you give me an ad? Mm. But we've had some people send us some messages about some stuff they've been in. We had a listener who says he is in Seattle and he has been to Chaz. And he sent us pictures.
Mm-hmm.
And what he said was, hey, I listened from Seattle. I've been to Chaz. No one is being held hostage. So that's good. And there is no armed guard points. People can leave and come at will. This is not a pretty sight, and it reminds me of the Occupy Wall Street movement 10 years ago that happened in the same area. No clear leader or message. The local population eventually got tired of it and moved along. Not sure how things will play out this time. People who live in the zone are surrounded by all the protesters, homeless, and whatnot. I imagine rents will be going down, leases canceled, etc. I think that's what we mean by hostages. They're not necessarily being held there against their will, but that's where they live, and this was done to them. So, you know, I think that's kind of what we were saying by hostages. But it'll be interesting to see now that they've had a couple of shootings and they haven't the paramedics wouldn't go in without the cops.
No.
And since they wouldn't let the cops in, the paramedics said, okay, then we're not coming in. I guess somebody bled to death.
Oh, yeah. And then you got one of the victims of the shooting was complaining on social media about how the law enforcement response wasn't fast enough.
Yeah,
I
saw
that. Like, what?
What part of autonomous did you miss?
Fuck out of here, dude.
But 1 second. So we're about to be joined by our Aussie friend, John Hurst. We've been waiting to get him on the show. And we were lucky enough to have it come together today. John, how are you, sir?
Maybe we could try.
Oh. Try again?
Yep.
There we go. We got you. How does that sound? Can you hear us?
Just there and there it goes.
Oh, there you go.
So we got John from Australia, and we were asked to get some international police officers. And I, from my friendship with Scott, we have a mutual friend, he had said we should get John on the show. So here he is. And now, John, you were a motor officer in what part of Australia?
South Australia, Adelaide.
Adelaide, okay. Adelaide. And that's what is that a province or is that a city?
That's a city.
Okay, and then
we're made up of a couple of five states and two territories.
Okay, and so Adelaide is in the southern part. And what size city would you say that is, comparatively speaking?
Shitful. Rather small. So we have a population of about 1.4 million.
Okay. So it's a decent sized city.
That's
decent
size.
Yeah. It's small compared to like LA and New York, but that's still a pretty decent sized city.
I would say so.
You know, most
of the world.
I live in a city that's only 200,000. Thank you, Jesus. I wish it was smaller. So you tell us a little bit about yourself. And tell us about police work in Australia, if you can, just briefly, because we don't know all that much about, you know, I know there's the gun laws are different in Australia and stuff like that.
Yeah, look, I've been in the police here just under 25 years. During my time, I've worked in a variety of different areas, including general patrols, or what we call general duties, which is uniformed marked police vehicles responding to all first responders to all incidents. I've worked in this what we call the criminal investigation branch, so our serious crime. I've investigated pedophilia, the major crime sort of roles. I've seconded there as to major crime over a murder of a 15-year-old girl, for an example. Believe it or not, from defending myself, I got suspended and put through the court system for an aggravated assault charge.
No. You were defending yourself and they took you to court.
Yes, so that happened in 2010.
So it's not just in the U.S.
No, let me dust off my surprise face because apparently everybody hates cops.
Man,
okay. So, but how did that work with your employment?
The most embarrassing part about that charge is when I'm before the courts, and because of the nature of the allegation being a serious assault, the first three people before me were murderers. Then we had two child sex offenders, and then they read out my charge, and it's because in self-defense I went to slap away the arm of the offender that was, well, basically blocked the arm of the offender that was trying to hit me, and subsequently collided with an open hand to the side of his face, and that's the allegation, and that was the charge of aggravated assault that took me out of the game for 4.5 years.
Wow.
Now, was this on duty or off duty?
No, this is on duty. Yep. After the driver was a drink driver. With the high-speed chase, and look, by memory, I can't remember what we call blowing, but we put him on a breath analysis machine, but it was, from memory, it was a 0.12. So,
okay.
Three times our limit for driving here.
What is your limit?
0.05.
Okay. Hmm. So lower than ours.
Yeah.
And
they dropped it to 0.05.
Okay, so he went on the machine. He was deuce, as we call it. He's DUI, and you go to arrest him, I'm assuming. And then, how do you go from arresting a guy for a legitimate offense to him being able to charge you with aggravated assault?
Oh, he didn't charge me. The police department did, because one of the other officers I was working with put the complaint through.
Oh my God, that's even worse. Geez. That is even worse.
Well, it even gets better when we were in court, let's call him the victim, gave evidence to say that I was the solo, like I was working by myself. The other two that arrived were working paired. We have here, generally speaking, in general patrols, we work in twos. Mm. I was a supervisor and I was working by myself, and the alleged victim, for my matter, well, he's not a victim because nothing ever happened, but the person gave evidence to say that I was the most cooperative and understanding police officer in court. And it was actually the other one of the members that assaulted him in the vehicle on the way back to the station, and it was him that handed me up.
So the guy that actually assaulted him laid it at your feet and got you in a 4.5 year penalty box until you could finally clear your name and get back on the department.
Correct.
Wow. If you don't mind me asking, what ended up happening to that officer?
Yeah.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
He got promoted.
Hang on. Excuse me for a moment. You just made me choke. What do you reckon they did with him?
He got promoted.
Fuck yeah.
Yep. How did we know?
Oh my God.
How did we know?
It's like we're psychic.
Oh man.
Oh. No, he got promoted. He also got integrity. He got his, what we have here is a National Service Medals for Police. We also have, so you get a National Service Medal, you get service medals for time and stuff like that. It's a warm and fuzzy feeling, you know, just to have some things hanging off your chest because we don't, whatever. But, part of that process of medals is for integrity and honesty. Mm. Now, I've been in for nearly 25 years. There's not one piece of shiny shit hanging off of my chest because I've been interviewed that many times for being a police officer for doing the job correctly. Well, or I perceive to be correctly.
Yeah.
However, old mate that stuck me in and lied, and when it came out, and in actual fact, I'll have a look in a second, see if it's on this computer. If not, I've got the results of and the findings from the magistrate. What we have here is a magistrate's court. I'll pull the findings out and I'll just read you one paragraph of what the magistrate said in relation to the two officers giving evidence. However, it was in, within a 3-month period that the said member, who's also both got promoted, both got their service medals for good conduct and high integrity.
Wow.
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 Just wow.
I just really wish I could say I'm surprised, and I'm just not.
Well, okay, so this job pisses people off, right? We know that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Being in the military pisses people off because you're often doing things to them or doing things in their country that they don't want done. Being, you know, an EMT can piss people off because not everybody wants to go to the hospital, not everybody wants help. But being a cop pisses people off because you're there on most people's worst day, and 50-50 chance you're taking them to jail or giving them bad news, right?
Right.
So I was always told that you're not doing your job correctly if you're not getting complained on, right? Mm-hmm. So that's part, I mean, we get that. That's part and parcel. People are going to complain. People are going to beef you. I had a woman complain against me for pointing a gun at her 12-year-old because he was running around with an airsoft gun that looked like the real thing. You know, they complain for whatever reason.
He's lucky he didn't get capped.
Exactly. But here you're telling me that this complaint wasn't even a citizen complaint. This was your own coppers, and he was trying to cover his own ass by throwing you under the bus.
Correct.
Wow. That's... I wish, again, wish I could say I was surprised.
Yeah, that sucks. But, that's too bad.
Well, so real quick, couple questions. Is your police force nationalized or is it regional? Like here, you know, each city has its own police department, and then counties have their own sheriff's department, and then states have their state police. It's not like a national police force. Is it the same in Australia, or are you guys nationalized similar to Great Britain?
No, we run a system where we have state and territory police. So we're all on the same level. And then we have what we call the Australian Federal Police, which is they not dominate, let's be fair, all the right gear, no idea. But they are like a federal-based police, which do international deployments. And their roles, investigations predominantly, things like the kiddie fiddling rings and stuff like that.
FBI type stuff, like what
we
have. Okay.
Well, yeah, they.
It's interesting that even in Australia, the local boys handle the real police work, and the feds handle the, you know, don't get your hands dirty police work.
Yeah.
It's same thing. Same. Yeah. Well,
so realistically, maybe they just made better choices. I'm not sure.
I don't know, man. I've had people try and get me to say I would go to the FBI, and I don't think I would. I don't want to. They're it's too close to being an accountant. It's a lot of number crunching and a lot of desk work, and I don't think so. Well, we appreciate you coming on, and I'm guessing you have a pretty intense story to share with us, from what I gather.
Well, after I came back from suspension, I thought, I lost a few things as a consequence. It probably cost me in that process, loss of wages, loss of penalties, and then having to pay for defense. It was probably in the vicinity of maybe, and then what we have here is like our pension scheme is called superannuation. So combining that all up, and it's a round ball figure, but it's probably in the close to the vicinity of $250,000.
Wow. That you lost?
Yeah.
And so did you regain any of that from? No. Okay. Just checking.
I love you. I love your positiveness, but let's be realistic.
Yeah, you're not lying.
Yeah. If I was in the welfare system, they probably would have given me $500,000.
Yeah.
Yeah, they'd have given you money just to go away.
Yeah. So when I came back, when I was like, basically what we have here is a system. It's called a Prasad hearing, or Prasad determination, and that's before I even have to give evidence. The magistrate goes away with all information and can come back with an answer of no case to be answered, like it should never be here, and that's exactly what he did. So I then, that was on the Friday, I think I drank Captain Morgan's from about maybe 12 o'clock Friday afternoon until about 6 o'clock Monday morning, so it was quite a long weekend. And then the boss turns up and decides that here's your warrant card back. Warrant card's our police badge that we carry. Mm. And here's all your stuff. And we're back to being friends again, like nothing's happened. Like, when are you coming back to work?
It was just dust you off and, you know, hey, no harm, no foul?
Oh, they didn't even give me that. It was just like, when are you coming back? Like, it's an expectation that I'm there. Like, sure, yeah, no worries. Like, let's just think about that for a moment. Anyway, cut through to that side of things, you know, you sort of ride the turmoil wave, but you join the job, much like you join the military, much like, you know, EMTs do what they do and fireys do what they do. Well, fireys generally sleep, let's be fair, but...
even in Australia, ladies and gentlemen.
That's why God invented police, so even fireys could have heroes. But, yeah, so I ended up going through what we call a motorcycle course here and became a solo motorcycle police officer. So I completed that in 2015 and subsequently transferred to motorcycles section thereafter.
Now here, motorcycles are specifically for writing tickets and taking accident reports. So I'm not sure if it's the same there.
Mate, taking motorcycle, taking accident reports are below us, right? We're the prestige down here.
Oh, so what do you guys do typically?
Fuck all.
oh, so it is like mortars here.
Yeah. We do a lot of traffic matters. We will respond to certain traffic accidents. We have different sections. We've got cars, like a traffic section in cars, so they will attend to all the accidents and stuff like that. We will assist. We're what we call the state traffic enforcement section. So we travel the state highways. We do all rural roads. We do a lot of escorts, whether it be dignitary or other protests, stuff like that. So anything that needs to be knocked out, as in, you know, city streets, and provide the secure passage for them to do that. We do the occasional escorts of wide loads, what we call wide loads or excessive size to block out roads. So semis can take like transportable houses or, you know, those wind farms. That was probably the most popular thing. Renewable energy like Hi-Fi for Jesus and let's all cuddle and sing Kumbaya. We're transferring those big farm mill or wind farms out. We also are pretty much responsive to most things that are traffic related, and we probably predominantly target drink drivers and drug drivers.
Okay.
So I'm not sure how you guys roll in the States, but we've got the power here to set up quasi what you'd call quasi roadblocks and direct vehicles in, and we stand on the line and alcotest.
So yeah, we do that. We call it a checkpoint, and we randomly select cars and interview them and see how much they've been drinking. And yep,
same thing. Yep. I know you guys have got to do the from what I have seen, and bear in mind that's all it is sobriety test or whatever it is. We've got the authority here to be able to stop a vehicle at any point and just put it straight up on the alkalizer, which is just an instrument. So it's just
Do you need a reason, like probable cause or reasonable suspicion or an admission? You just say, hey, by the way, blow into this.
Yeah, look, we've got two powers here. We've got the first power is a mobile random breath test. So I'm just happen to be riding my little scooter behind you, and I think, nothing's going on. I'm not really doing a whole lot. I'll just wheel old mate up in front of me here and put him on the side of the road and put him on the alco tester.
Damn. I got to at least look for a taillight out.
See, now that's the next part. We have what we call a Part 3 offence under the it's under the Road Traffic and the Australian Road Rules. So if there's a Part 3 offence committed, we've then got the authority then to also alco-test.
Okay.
So there's sort of you could almost argue it's a duplicitous bit of legislation that I guess it covers all matters of sin just to keep us safe. But then if we drug test, we have to do an alco test before you can drug test. You can't just walk up and you can see, you know, someone's been on the glass barbecue and their eyes are blazing as you roll in.
The glass barbecue. I like it.
You can't just stroll on up and go, oh, here, lick this for me. Actually, that doesn't sound right, does it? we've got to alco test them first, screen them that way, and then screen them for drugs thereafter. So we're pretty fortunate in that sense with the legislation. It's not overpowering. It's just simply covering all aspects for road safety. And,
sure.
And they take it pretty seriously on that front down here, which is pretty good. So that's probably mainly the focus that we do.
Which it sounds like if that's a nice assignment, especially after the bullshit you went through, I wouldn't turn my nose up at taking that assignment after the 4.5 years of hell.
No, look, it's funny you say that because, sorry, we worked obviously solo, but, you know, you form some pretty good friendships. So you ride two or three up or work an area together. So there's always someone in the vicinity or, you know, it all depends. So you've still got difficulty trusting with anybody post that particular, that incident. I had a problem trusting who I was working with or anyone that I rode up to a job with, in particular of a physical or, violent confrontation. I was comfortable in my decisions and what I did and how I went about it, and I'd do it again and I'd do it again and I'd even do it again. And I would go through the process again to actually determine and to demonstrate that we should be able to look after ourselves. You know, we're not punching bags. We're not paid to be, you know, taken for advantage. I've got two young children. I don't know old mate from a bar of soap, and I don't know exactly what he's going to do. Mm-hmm. So, the reality is we make decisions within a split second or not even a split second, maybe 0.2 of a second, and that decision is going to be carried with you for the rest of your life.
Sure.
Well, we take 2 seconds, or split second to make that decision, every bastard's got a lifetime to sit back and analyze it and critique it.
No, you're absolutely right. And I think we share the same feelings as you. Now, you did send us some pretty, I don't even know what the right word to say would be, graphic, pretty harrowing pictures, which is why we wanted to have you on the show and for you to elaborate on that for us, if you would.
Okay, yeah, so that was the 21st of July, 2017. It was a normal, in actual fact, it wasn't a normal. July here in Australia is winter. Obviously, we're on the opposite scale to you people. And I remember, we can discuss spirituality as well and delve into some of those things. But as true as my soul's pointing to the ground as I sit here, I woke up that morning and there was nothing wrong with me physically, mentally, psychologically. There was just nothing wrong whatsoever. However, my initial thought was, don't go to work, don't go to work, don't go to work. Hmm. And I'm just thinking this is somewhat bizarre. Now, I got up, went around my normal routine, have a shower, don't go to work, don't go to work. It just was persistent. Put my leathers on. Well, actual fact, I hadn't seen the weather before I'd gone out, so I'd put partial leather, partial wet weather gear on because it's normally cold and wet and raining here in that time. Came out, made my coffee, had my breakfast. I had a conversation with my then partner. She was one of those plastic federal police people. The old padlock checker, security guards.
Right, but, yeah, rattling doors and stop or I'll say stop again.
Oh, look, she had a role to play. She thought she was important, so that's good. Had a chat with her, same thing. Anyway, long story short, I get on the motorbike, I ride out the driveway, still having this complete unrealistic and unknown and very strongly guided. I don't want to use the word premonition because I didn't see it. It was just some crazy shit saying, don't go to work, which probably most people have on most days, but it was just a really strong and definitely there. Anyway, long story, I continued on. As I said, it turned out to be actually a really nice day. It was beautiful, beautiful iridescent blue sky.
But your gut was just telling you not to go.
Yeah, everything was telling me just not to go. Like, it was just bizarre. Anyway,
that's crazy.
I end up pulling up a guy not too far from my home because, you know, so we take our motorcycles home. We take all of our stuff home. All of our equipment's issued to us.
Sure.
So the moment you roll out the door, out of your driveway, you're on duty. And pulled up a guy for being on a mobile phone. I'm not sure over there how they take it, but here it's relatively serious in the traffic world. So pulled him up. Had a chat with him, made friends with him, I'm sure, that morning, and got back on my bike, and I thought, why was it that I didn't want to go to work, like, on a beautiful day like this? You know, just what is it? Anyway, I kept riding, and I was maybe 5 kilometres down the road. We work in kilometres here, so that'd be about 3 miles down the road, and I've just gone... Something made me pick up the radio to call my sergeant to say I'm not coming. And I thought, no, can't do that. I've got a kid at home that I've got to, you know, show some form of leadership to and show him that you've got to go to work. He had just started working and he's a lazy shit at the best of times. So I put that back up. Anyway, just sort of giving you a bit of perspective. At 7:28 a.m. on the 21st July, I issued... the guy with the mobile phone, a ticket, and at 7:38 a.m. I was lying on the road getting worked on by ambulance.
Jeez. Just that fast.
What had happened from what I understand, my memory of it now is pretty non-existent. However, at the time of the accident and the time of being in hospital, the neurologists in the hospital record all your conversations and continually ask you questions to make assessment on brain matter. And AMBO's, we've got a couple of different sections here. We've got your general paramedic, then you've got an intensive care paramedic, and then we have what we call MedStar, which are doctors and nurses. So we've got the three different levels. Anyway, from what I understand, whichever ambulance service, I know that the first crews arrived, which were just they are life-saving paramedics. And do a brilliant and fantastic job here. They've arrived. I remember bits and pieces of chattering and stuff, getting rolled over. From the information that I got back from the neuros and from the ambulance service themselves is I was intercepting another vehicle that happened to be on a mobile phone. So I had my red and blues going. A car had pulled out from a service station on the left-hand side of the road. I'm focusing on traffic I did see him come out from my understanding. And he's changed lanes and basically stopped in the middle of the road. Oh, I've had nowhere to go and not a lot of time. Look, there was the old fuck moment and I only know that, I think, from the CCTV footage that was showing. You see me touch the brake, so that must have been... Well, I might have just got to the... Oh, I don't even know if I got fuck out. And I've collided to the side of the vehicle. Then the roof racks penetrated my helmet, gone through my visor, gone through my frontal lobe of the brain and through my right eye. As a consequence of the roof rack going through there, it pushed my right... sunglass lens about 3.5 inches into my brain.
Oh.
So I had a massive exposure to the brain that was leaking out of my right eye socket. The front section here of my, or the frontal crown, or what we call it, temple. No, temple's outside. Whatever this is, the frontal area.
You're right.
That was basically, just completely... annihilated, like they could see my brain was basically exposed. So that was that part. My whole face was completely fractured. The interesting part is I kept all my teeth, go figure. Like
Well, dental work's the expensive part. Yeah, so. Yeah.
Well, sorry, like, let's be fair about it. It would have cost the police department a fortune to pay for that shit.
At least it was just, you know, your brow and the rest of your face.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was a model before, and as you can see me now, I'm still a half-reasonable-looking bloke, but just a little bit of damage there to my modeling career. But, no, you know, it's funny. They can spend nearly approximately $1 million prosecuting you for an offence that didn't occur, but they don't want to pay your dental work. In actual fact, they don't really like paying a whole lot. But, the injuries extended to frontal lobe, loss of right eye. So this thing pops out. It's great. I'd have to try to find it. That's what took me about 5 minutes to actually get back. I couldn't find the thing. Sometimes it just falls somewhere. And I may have had one or three cans of JD last night. So it tends to fall out when I'm drinking. I'm not sure why. I also had both my left and right arms were completely spirally fractured.
Spiral?
So my left was the worst because I had that hanging over the clutch. So that got the fracture started basically from the wrist and went 3/4 of the way up the bicep. So I've got about $195,000 worth of titanium plates and screws in that to hold me together. And then my right hand side, fortunately, that must have been the old, you know, when the old "this is not going to work out well" routine happened. I've let go of the brake, which probably saved me a reasonable amount of damage to the right arm, but that was still completely fractured, spirally fractured from the wrist to the elbow. Then I think it was 7 cracked ribs, and then both my legs were shattered, basically. They had to rebuild my whole left leg. So that was probably the most prominent of the injury.
Your left leg?
That whole lot. I think probably the most injured is the brain hanging out.
Yeah, that's kind of, I'm like, your left leg, really? Out of all the things you're describing?
Let me just tell you a quick story, and this is a very important story for men who ride motorbikes and have tank bags. I used to, you know, we carry a relative amount of equipment in the tank bag, and that alco tester, your notebooks, your pens. Unlike you guys over there, we don't have to carry spare rounds and shit like that in there. So it's just our general run of the mill. Anyway, I used to have that packed for when I didn't, like, we do highway trips, and I used to put foam and bubble wrap bullshit in there. I'm a bit meticulous like that. I don't know. Perhaps maybe I'm touched on the head with the fairy dust and with some OCD, but I had that in there. Anyway, I used to take a fair, you know, there's about 3 or 4 guys at work used to give me so much shit about having it. And I said, if I ever have a crash and I'm going to go over the handlebars, that bubble wrap and foam's going to save my balls because that's what's going to slap the tank. Well, when I wake up out of a coma, the first thing I did was grab my junk to make sure it was in the
point. Priorities.
Yeah, to prove the point that my fucking bubble wrap and foam saved my balls.
Nice.
I was trying to work out how I could probably patent that and sell it off as a life-saving device for men who ride bikes, but I'm not too sure how to go about it.
Yeah, you need to go on Shark Tank with that. That's I don't know if they have that in Australia, but here it's a show where people pitch their inventions to rich people. Take that on Shark Tank.
I'll give it a run. I just noticed, is my video working for you guys?
No, it's not. I didn't want to interrupt you, but your blank screen.
What's going on here? Let me tell you, technology, standby.
So I'm going to guess that because it was a police department, a government agency, as the doctors come out saying, well, we're going to need to put $195,000 worth of titanium in him in just one arm, the department went, well, how much is plastic?
Yeah. Actually, you know, I think in fairness, I will be fair. Okay, hang on. Turn video on. tell you, I need a fucking 10-year-old kid to show me how to use a fucking computer.
Well, that's how they design them. Kids, Fisher-Price my first iPad these days.
Turn video on, so I'm pressing the... Nah, fuck's sake. That's it. I feel like Bill Burr. There we go. That should work. Camera on. Well, it's giving me some detail.
Yeah, there we go.
Oh, sorry about that. Sorry to scare you. Yeah, no, they were pretty good. In fairness, from what I understand, again, I was completely out of it. I was in a coma for a few weeks and, you know, my first lot of surgery, they shut down after, I think, 6.5 hours because I gave way on the table. So it was, they went back to revival mode and pulling me out. So I was then put into a coma for a period of time. I think it may have been 6 or 7 days, but they had to pull me back out of the coma to put me back in a surgery, because if they didn't, well, then I was going to expire, no doubt. And if they put me back in a surgery, I had a low percentage chance of survival rate anyway. But it was either it was a zero-sum policy, really. Either we pull him out and give him a chance, or he's going to end up cactus. So
right.
They pulled me out. And I think that surgery, look, I think that lasted 21 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a reasonable sort of surgery. So that was putting my... Well,
at least they let you lie down through it. That was nice.
Sorry?
They let you lie down through the 21 hours, so that was nice of them.
Let me just tell you, ever since having kids, I've never fucking slept so well in all my life. I came out of that coma feeling like I was 15 again. Like, I recommend it to everybody.
Everybody should have a coma once in a while.
Everyone should, exactly right. I think
a week, quick 7 days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go to the doctor, quick 7-day coma.
Yeah, take part of your annual leave and go have one. Like, that's, you come out of that shit, you feel like you're 10 years younger. It was fantastic.
There's been a couple of hangovers I'd like to do, like a 24-hour coma through.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's been a couple of hangovers I would have paid to get a 24-hour coma to get through.
Completely understandable. But I'm just not sure 24 hours is going to cut it.
So you're sitting here talking to us. So clearly, how long were you in the hospital?
All up. So that was in July. My final, well, I'm still in and out of hospitals now with surgeries, but for the long stretch, that happened in the July, and I got bailed out of hospital when Scotty flew over here in April of 2018.
Yeah. And our friend Scott did the most amazing thing. He reached out to, I guess your favorite rugby club.
And, let's not talk rugby. That's just wrong. I don't know if we can be friends anymore. It's what we call AFL, Australian Football League.
Australian Football League, the AFL, Australian Rules Football. And so Scott reached out to him and then flew to Australia. It was a surprise, right? You had no idea.
Yeah, complete surprise. I limped to the front.
And you guys met when you were children.
Yeah, we were both in – it's funny. It's ironic, him being the actor and all that sort of stuff. He ended up picking up he auditioned for a spot in a movie called Aaron's Way, which had Merlin Olsen, Samantha Mathis, who was still pretty good looking back then too, let me just tell you, Aaron Chase and Scotty. Anyway, that because of the way it was designed around the Amish people and they needed to have, grapevines and stuff like that in season, and because it wasn't working out in the US at the time, they flew the whole cast out here to Adelaide, Australia, and I happened to be an extra in the movie and met Scott, was of similar age and stuff like that, and from that moment we built up a friendship that's lasted pretty much since
since you guys were both little tykes. And So Scott, and I'm going to brag on Scott a little bit. You know, Scott's a supporter of law enforcement. Yeah, he doesn't need a bigger head. He flew to Australia, contacted his favorite football club, and got them both admitted to the stadium for a practice. Is that like? So he got to go hang out with the team and watch them practice and Scott surprised them and took them there, and they you know did the whole like VIP treatment once he got out of the hospital.
Nice.
So, you know.
Yeah, no, it was
I'm not sure it's worth the price of admission, but it's a cool thing to do.
Right.
Correct. Like I I'd not long come out of hospital when Scott arrived. And he had been a sneaky little shit. And had been in contact with a guy that I went to law school with here. I studied law at university, and I had a particular friend by the name of Daniel Coyne, who he and I became very good mates and still are very good mates. He went on to practice law. I went on to go into court and get charged. He and Scott had devised this. So some ungodly hour of the morning, I get this knock at the door. I think it was daylight, but I didn't realise that 8 o'clock in the morning existed. I only thought 8 o'clock was at night, because I like to sleep in these days. But and I open the door, and there's Scott standing there. And, like, I'm poor bastard. He's probably got nightmares, because I'm standing there in my koala suit, which is just a pair of jocks, guts hanging out. I've opened the door, like, who the fuck? Must be Jehovah's Witness or something. I open the door, and there's Scott standing there, like, fucking surprise. And, yeah, it was completely and utterly... It was it took me, I don't know.
It took some time to wrap your mind around it, probably.
Yeah, just to digest it. You know, here's this guy that, yes, we've been good friends and I haven't seen him since 2000, Jesus, settle down. I haven't seen him since 1987.
Wow.
That was the last time when I flew over to LA and stayed with, gotten his family in Van Nuys and got given the royalty treatment there by going to Paramount. I think it was Paramount Studios. It was one of the studios.
Yeah.
Met every swinging dick in town that was, you know, of all the hype in the 80s. Just got treated and just had an amazing experience and time. You know, and we've maintained the friendship.
Sure.
And obviously Facebook has been somewhat instrumental in that.
Yeah.
But and here he is standing at my front door. Like, what sort of American turns up at 8 o'clock in the morning, though?
Well, Scott does. He's crazy.
Yeah. Go get a hotel, dude, and have a sleep. Come and see me at about 1 o'clock in the Arvo. What are you doing? Fuck off.
Now, you are still on the department?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
What's your assignment now? Because clearly they had to the rehabilitation. I doubt they have you back on a motorbike.
Believe it or not, this is the you asked me what's my assignment. I think my assignment is, how can I be fucked off by the department? They don't want me. It's quite evident that I'm not a wanted. Like, you know, we've heard this, you know, it's the old cliche saying that, we're all a number, right? You're just
right.
A number.
Just a number.
And we've bandied that around a lot. And I think that's an international gig. We're no orphans in military, police, air, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Hose fairies, the works. But I want to change that philosophy. I want to put it to you and your listeners, right? To perhaps maybe reconsider this. No, it's not even a theory. Well, that's a theory, but I'm going to put the hypotheses to you. You're a liability. From the day you start employment, whether it be in whatever role, you're treated as a liability by the employer. It just depends on how much of a liability you become.
Yeah.
Right? Now, if you're the golden-haired boy or girl that, right, or gender fluid, or so we make sure we're all making sure we're not upsetting someone else and going to have fucking more rights, right? If you are the golden haired individual, right, who really just floats under the radar, they're the lazy fucks that never do any work, but they do enough just to keep the heat off them, but not too much that they stress themselves out, they're a low liability. But if you go and actually do your job and what you're paid to do, and look, of course, it's a subjective test, but objectively, your results turn out in the court systems, your level of turnover, you know, productivity rates, and, you know, of course, with the high productivity, you're going to have high complaint. So you're a high liability. The more work you do, the more inadequacies they see or failings, or flaws they see in your work, the more they then target you. Right?
Wow.
So,
I think you're right. I think you're absolutely right. They're looking at you as, what is the likelihood that you're going to get us sued, protested against, land us on the 11 o'clock news, or get hurt or hurt somebody so bad that we have to write a big check? And I can tell you, it's not just you guys, and I have spoken to The arrest and control instructor for LAPD at the time, he was one of the arrest and control instructors for LAPD. And we talked about certain control holds that were highly effective, highly, highly effective in subduing suspects. But the LAPD would not allow them. And I asked him why, because my department allowed him. And he goes, well, I was in a meeting and it was us, command staff, and risk management. Well, if you don't know what risk management is, you've never clearly worked in public safety. Those are the bean counters. Those are the guys that decide, you know, whether you do it or not. And it's all based on liability. The big, the scariest L word in law enforcement isn't law, it's liability.
Yep.
And
they're so risk adverse, right? But
right.
The people making those decisions right there have never actually faced the angry person.
Correct. Correct.
Never put their hands on someone or tried to detain them in order to put handcuffs on. Never stood there and said, you're under arrest, and then had to punch the shit out of them. Hang on a sec. The copper ringing. Let me turn that bastard off.
Well, I can tell you this. The LAPD sergeant, with a straight face, said to me, he said, I would rather, or well, the risk manager said to him, he looked at me with a straight face, and he said, the risk manager said to him in this meeting, I would rather see a cop get hurt and have to retire than to have to pay a suspect that we injured or pay out in an excessive force lawsuit. And I was dumbstruck that I had probably 2 years on the job at that time, but I was dumbstruck that there were people that were willing to look cops in the face and say, yeah, I'd rather, and these are other cops, like, and lawyers, and say, yeah, we'd rather you and your partners get hurt and we have to put you out to pasture than write a big check for a lawsuit.
Yeah, we're pretty fortunate there. Our commissioner, his name is Mr. Grant Stevens. He came out maybe 3 or 4 days ago in our paper, put out an opinion piece. And, you know, since all of this stuff sort of kicked off in the States, obviously it's got international momentum thanks to CNN and a few of the other left-wing bullshit diatribe, sanitized media programs, which are then disseminated through the left, you know, the complete left. So we've had they had a protest here maybe, I don't know, 2 weeks ago for Black Lives Matter. And look, we've got an Indigenous culture here. There are some issues that they hold dear to their heart, and who's to question right, wrong, or indifferent. And, you know, my opinion on these sort of protests is I think anyone can protest, knock yourselves out.
Sure.
Whether it be Black Lives Matter, whether it be fucking Orange Lives Matter. But it's how you conduct yourself that gives you the credibility for your cause.
Yeah, don't be an asshole.
Correct. What's burning down other people's businesses doing for you? Right. I mean, are you doing, from what I understand, and again, I'm internationally, you know, detracted from it, but, well, not even detracted, not the right word, you know, set aside
Yeah, you're separated from it, and you're watching it as an outside observer, so to speak.
Now, look, from a perspective that... Oh, hang on, I'll tell you about Grant Stevens. He came out in the paper, and I'll send you the link to it. You'd have a read. It was really good to see that he stepped up, and he's a very good leader. There's no doubt about that. As a commissioner goes, as a quasi-politician, I guess, pleasing everybody is a difficult job. But he came out and stuck up for... an incident that occurred here, saying that, you know, we can make these judgments and we can do this and we can do that, but my police are being spat on, kicked, punched, stabbed, shot at, you know, on a daily basis. So,
well, that's good.
So, you know, and I think the premise of what he was saying is, look, we can all be armchair critics, but there's also there's also the other side of the story. So he had the decency, the respect, and the value, which is obviously going to be returned by the members and supporting their actions, which means they then go and do their job and do it right. But if you're being criticised, I mean, why would an American police officer want to go out in the street now? Like, what's the fuck? How retarded is the general population? Let's defund the fucking police. But hang on. Here, you know, like that. What's that, Chaz or fucking Chap or some shit? I mean, what's that supposed to be anyway? But anyway, these fuckwits that set up this little camp, right, and sing Kumbaya and fucking don't wash and, you know, think they're back in Woodstock.
But then they shoot each other and don't let the police in.
Spot on.
Yeah.
Well, fucking, so your fucking utopia, fuckwits. You're killing yourselves inside there, which I think is great. I think you should throw more guns over the top of that wall, right, and a whole fuckload of ammo.
Yeah.
Right? And then just sit back and let them clean them up. Like, perfect.
Yeah.
But, the interesting part is, you know, with the protesting side of things, it's all well and good, and I think everyone has the right to protest and should have the right to protest. What comes down to it, though, is what cause are you trying to push for, and what's the result? Yeah.
What do you want?
Yeah. And civil unrest and what they're doing is people like myself. Now, okay, you may call me a radical right-wingist. I don't believe I'm radical. I think I'm on the border because I can see, from my point of view, I can see what's actually happening. We're going into New World Order, to a socialist environment that is completely and utterly just going to be fucking destructive. And all the US is doing, or the people, let me refresh it. A percentage of the people are weakening a democracy in order for China now to step up to the plate, and they're loving life. Not only they're no economic powerhouse, but you've got total discohesion in the homogeneity of a unipolar sector. What's their best chance now is to step up and go, fuck you, we're coming on in.
Right.
And that's the reality is that the states are now facing and haven't got the ability that the general person, probably the general person does, but the general person is not standing up. Why aren't they standing up? Because they haven't got the ability and support to do so. But if you're a left-wingist who wants to change the world, you'll be given everything to do it.
Well, John, I hope that I know you've got more stories, and our listeners are. I still have a lot of things. I want to know what kind of gun you carry. I want to know, because you said you don't carry extra rounds. What's it like to do police work in a place where people aren't allowed to have guns? So, would you come back on and talk to us about something, some of that stuff? Well, I definitely appreciate it, John. And next time you talk to Scott, tell him he is a giant ego pain in the ass.
I think you're over it. I really feel that you're giving him too much credit.
Well, he did put us together, and he did suggest for the show. So he's a good bloke, as you would say.
He's a good egg. He's very patriotic. He's very caring. He's very loving. He's the ultimate family man, and I think we could learn a lot from people like him.
Yeah, and he's a big supporter of the military, the police, firefighters, nurses. For those of you that have heard the show and heard Aaron. Aaron and I both grew up with Scott. Scott's good people. And, we thank you for Scott bringing you to us. And we'd like to set something up to follow up with you in a couple of weeks or maybe a month or two to get you back on. Tell us another story from Australia. And if you have any other buddies that they have some great stories, we'd be happy to have them on as well.
Yeah, I'm more than happy to come back on and as many times as you like. And I'm also happy to bring you some other variant, perspectives to give your listeners a holistic view, not just a right-wing radicalist fuckwit who's took something through the brain and probably is walking in circles like a duck.
And if tomorrow, if it's really already tomorrow there, would you please do me a favor and check the American news and tell me what the winning lottery numbers are?
Right, I stand by. Have a look now. what is it? It's 10 to 9 on the Friday morning. And it just says here, looking at it now, tell Thomas, stiff shit, you're shit out of luck.
Thanks, John.
Get a refund now while the going's good.
We appreciate you, man. Be well, and we'll talk to you soon.
Look forward to it. Stay beautiful.
All right.
Bye-bye.
All right, John.
See ya.
Oh, what a great guy, and what a fuck, man. That's I can't even imagine, dude, having your brain being exposed through your eye hole.
I was thinking about that because, we both have ridden.
Oh, yeah.
We both had Harleys for a while, lived that lifestyle. And, I had a pretty horrific accident back in 2009.
Yeah,
almost lost my right foot.
Right.
And that looks like nothing compared to that story we just listened to.
No.
But yeah, we have to have him. You guys have to have him back on. I want to know what kind of bikes they ride.
I can't tell from the picture, and I will post the picture of the accident. You can't tell. It maybe was a BMW at one point. Maybe it was a. I don't know. It's so destroyed. Lord. It's. You look at the pictures. You go. Nobody lived through that. But
that's when you showed me that. And I was I said, was that a motorcycle?
Yeah. So and the doctors did a good job. He's still ugly, but
he was probably ugly before.
He was probably ugly before. Yeah. So they just made him as ugly as he was before.
Yeah, that's great.
So
he broke even.
Well, you can hear, you can stay tuned. Matt and I are going to be probably launching the midweek show the Locker Room Podcast, War Stories Locker Room Podcast, in the next week or two. So keep listening for updates on that. And John will be continuing on with us in our regular episodes, and then bumping in and out of that with me from time to time. So until our next episode, come home with your shield or on it.